Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is a podcast while walking just after the fair amount of rain. There's a tropical cyclone in the Coral Sea coming down, and it's just making the weather a bit unstable at the moment. A lot of rain coming down. I'm saying this because this is a general fill-in podcast for some general development during the day. So I'm, as people, listeners will know, I've got to do a certain amount of cardiac rehab to get really fit, get down to weight and all that type of stuff. And so the government, in their wisdom, has basically a year of every month or so these dietitians phoning you up and pestering you about your weight and your fitness, and sort of keeps you focused all okay. And one of the mysteries is we're cleaning out my son's room and found an old set of scales, which, yeah, like the scales I had bought was from Kmart, and they were atrocious, accurate to 5 kilograms, which is really not enough. Sort of, it plays with your mind. Sort of, sometimes you're overweight and you move the scales, and then you're underweight and all that type of stuff. But these scales are accurate to 0.1 kilogram. Yeah, quite repeatable to within 0.2 kilos on different floors. Yeah, this is great, and sort of sensitive enough to see if you weigh yourself with, you know, your wallet and all that type of stuff. You can pick that sort of stuff up. And of course, it's a great psychological thing for me, because I'm feeling hungry, I go, I'll look away myself. this is probably the worst possible stuff, but it's meant that I'm really focusing on that. And I've got to lose a massive 10 kilograms. I've lost a little bit, but you've just got to keep on working. And while it was raining today, if it rains, I do the exercise bike. It only lasts about 15 minutes on that bump, slowly building up. And this one will be the national park. Last time I just did the mouth in the national park, but now I'll go down to the gully and come back up again. So I think it's actually rather interesting in terms of that if you put your hand up, you can actually get support. And with this cognitive stuff, you've got to be able to learn to read and stuff like that. And so today I was doing the podcasting, Chasing the Sun. Just trying to think. The last episode was about, was to do with times and clocks. This today's episode was on solar cells. Sort of really just sort of missed it. It made some points, but it was all sort of, it's almost as, I can sort of see the garbleness of this person. He's out there, he says it, but he hasn't refined it into simple points. One is that we are using too much energy, have to cool it down. Two, there's a coal lobby has done certain things to torpedo there. There's no sort of headline view. You can pick that up. And the information is really, garbled. And this is one of the interesting things I do find, is that I have difficulty getting out the information. There are these sometimes complex concepts. I will hit, and occasionally one person will shake out of the tree, and they've understood the first step of many. That was many steps to understand. So, as people may have been listening, I've been just pushing away, plugging away at the scaled universe as a window into educational minds. You know, the universe is out there. Why build one here? Well, it's a mind and a learning thing. And after several examples of what's going on, where people tend to don't listen at a certain level, but don't listen at an understanding, they have their maths switched off, And so if you've got a maths message and everyone walks around like zombies with their maths switched off, you don't get your message through. And part of the things I'm finding is that people tend to... communication is not a simple thing. It tends to, if they communicate well, they move towards their communication works. And so they tend to drift into areas where they surround people who can understand them. And that's quite a good thing, because you then sort of build a complexity where something requires a certain range of understanding, and it goes through several grades of people, and it sort of, the information winds its way out and through different groups of people. And so you can read someone and say, well, they think they're a great communicator, but that is horrible communication. Like this Sun book, this is the general, well, this is a general idea, I think, in I think the Myers-Briggs and all this now thoroughly disproved personality typing, and this is Kurdston Adaptive Innovation Index. One of the things that they did say, which I think is true regardless of the index, is that people have communication styles appropriate to what they're trying to do and who they're with, but that communication has to go from point A to point B, and has to go through people intermediary. And so if you are happen to be, so go out west, you know, go out of the encampment, so to speak, and explore things, you come back and the person you first meet will not be someone who speaks your local language. It's sort of a bit like Papua New Guinea, where there's 700 or I think 7,000, depending on what encyclopedia you read. But you can imagine someone from Papua New Guinea, he sort of coming out, doing a stay at Harvard, I don't know, quite like, then going back and being put somewhere else in Papua New Guinea. Yes, they are from Papua New Guinea, but their conversation and culture varies. It's the microculture problem, which varies so much in getting the information across. I'm just trying to actually dissect how much you should actually build people's understanding of it. As I'm failing in communication to get certain projects are going ahead because it's communication and engineering. The engineering's come along, and now I'm looking at the communication aspect of it. And so it's so much so if you come back and you say, look, this is the basic information I want to get across, but there is a communication problem. It could be me, it could be outside, but we have to look at that. That's one of the things that you can see from reading, or I can see from reading this book. And you can still see terms of cognitive rehab. Halfway through, I began to yawn and fall asleep. To go off, come back, now I could do the next half. And I'm sure in time people wouldn't be normally expected to read an hour full up. But the expression, so I can hear myself slow down. And of course, it's very hard. You only read aloud if you believe your podcast and there's a few people out listening. And now, that was one aspect. And during the day, I began to explore. There's the Einstein pendulum. I'll give a talk about exactly what that is and why it's important. And sort of a classic, you know, bashing the prison door with a crowbar. Eventually, you know, the hinges drop off and things like that. You get into the next cell, so to speak, going through it. So the Einstein pendulum is that if pendulums, if electrons are little gyros and you flip them in time, you should be able to do that with sufficient, oh, I've got to have a look at this, sufficient accuracy to actually get a macroscopic thing to move. So if you set everything up, the numbers are incredible. The effect is incredibly small, and essentially you'd be insane. I'm running my hand on this beautiful, there's rain, and there's this beautiful new chromed handrail. It's not new, it's old. Oh, I don't know, it's that new. I think they put them in new. Gee whiz. They couldn't have done that. It looks absolutely new. So I'm just walking around Glenbrook Station, and this is where they're putting the bloody lift. Oh my God, Father. Talk about deep. They've got to dig right down. I can see, oh, it's dark, it's deep dark in there. Foundation, oh, that would be the lift mechanisms up the top. Yep, to go across. Nothing too inspirational about anything there. Design work for this, it's just sort of minimum to get away. Just to give you a thing is that Glenbrook Station's in a cutting from a gorge, and it's a nightmare for disabled people to get to. And the government is saying, yes, we're delivering it to you. But, you know, people are not saying, oh, it's 20 years late and you've promised it 10 times. So it's sort of like thanks. It's sort of like someone giving you a Christmas present in July after calling you to say, we've got the present for you, and you go away. But it is interesting to see. You can see various work there. It's just a bit... oh, and this is the vegetation that they've talked about removing. Okay. The Einstein pendulum is fantastic because there is quantum mechanics, which people say, observe, there's math you can't understand, but trust me, quantum mechanics, because you wouldn't be able to calculate it. It's not sort of a really good selling point. Now, if you can have something mysteriously begin to move due to quantum mechanics, a physical thing in the world move, that's one great thing. Now, unfortunately, when you really get into it, this is incredibly small. And so, small effect. This is, I believe, it's an unbelievably small effect. But, sort of, I don't know. Normally years go past, I'd have a good chunk across the equations, and half the battle is just getting all those equations together, and just, as a little gut. The equations are sort of like a map for you to bushwalk into an experiment. But at any rate, so here's the basic experiment, here's the story that I can get. I read up as much as I could without having a paywall. And, you can ask people at the university to let you have access to it, but you're burning up valuable goodwill. I really think that's one thing. Having spoken to other stroke people at the Return Soldiers stuff, is that, yeah, there is intense goodwill when goodwill's in play, but when it's not in play, in areas it's not in play, it's just not in play. And so you got to get used to that and, build up and work out. And I think what people are interested in is a to and from ongoing easy relationship which they can carry their narrative to. A stroke person, they can't carry their narrative to. They're kind of, you have something here. I'm someone who forgets his story. Oh, bloody hell. People are going to run a mile. I think maybe essentially. But I've gone off and built a version of the Einstein pendulum, and it just shook the bejesus out of it. And that's because my switching was just rough and ready. And so you say, oh, you're an idiot. But it's not, I think the real story is that possibly the lowest form of someone who just say, just make up excuses and put people, I think this would have to be the lowest form of someone who doesn't want to understand, doesn't want to do it, and makes up an excuse which somehow is a hidden insult to everyone around them. Thank you, hello, thank you very much for existing. But that being said, I'm not quite like that. I've got as much, say if you've got your textbook version, I'll see if I can build a textbook model of it, which is really called a production, a concept prototype. Everything is in conceptually the right place, and you switch it on and you get these things. And so your concept of switching, which is mechanical relays, is just absolutely appalling. And so I've evolved to solid state switches, and solid state switches don't work because there's solid state things require a polarity crossing to work. And so what you do is that you have a bit both ways called an H-bridge, and then sort of parallel to that there's the Arduino understanding, and it's taken a while to say, oh look, this is quite good, they've got some aspects of it, but you have to program an Arduino, you have to have a compiler offline and feed it, it's like down a straw to, it's like being trapped underground. So you can see it, and it's C++, but there's not a lot of intelligence. If you put intelligence into an Arduino, that's astonishing, but its ability to react and respond is very limited. It can react and respond to, it's not like, Arduinos strike me as dumb. They're dumb in terms of that they have the chips nowadays put out the digital signal of what they're measuring, essentially. So your pH meter, your magnetometer, they can put out, if you really ask them, a analog signal, but the onboard stuff does signal processing. It's not so advanced that the computer, sort of what we would assume is computer modules, has moved out then. So the Arduino, which loves analog, will take an analog thing and will work sensitively, but you're throwing away everything. It sort of missed the boat, this is very much for me. Previously, I would think I could buy a PLC, I could program it, it could be $20, it takes so much time, or I could harvest a computer that someone is throwing out, some of those bloody big spiders saying that round through here, thank goodness, not here, it's going to be probably quite dangerous. It has just rained, so I'm surprised there are these big spiders out. Okay, so my feeling is Raspberry Pi. It's basically, if I want to get a chip, I plug in a keyboard, a mouse, a monitor, and then I can put 30 gigabyte. Whereas Raspberry Pi has been clever with 30 kilobytes. This has got 30 gigabytes that you can just slot in. Now, the thing is that once you've got a Raspberry Pi, there's no long-term interconnectivity of the Arduino. So I'm just really pushing off there. And so I've got the Arduino board, and it's taken a while for me to... Motor shield, which is your Arduino board, and you can actually put the other board on cross. It's sort of like, it's like a Lego block. It clinks over the top and makes it ridiculously easy. There's no wiring, because the wiring, every wire is is online for you, but this one, the trip's down there, and it's dissipating some what is it, 25 watts it's an amazing thing. And then you just look at it and you can say, oh, the same board with the same chip on a heat sink, right, is can just do so much better, and it's a dollar or so cheaper. So this is, you're talking $13, something like that, or actually you can get, I got mine from what is it now, I got it from an Australian supplier, which you pay postage for, where, as if you, I don't know how they do it, but the Chinese suppliers, they don't do, but you can get it for free. Now, they claim that they will be 3 months or 2 months waiting. It's generally only 1 or 2 weeks, not the same week delivery. It's just because it's too expensive to be really bad. The world is so good now that if you want to deliver a really bad service, like the worst service is high up there, because there's someone up there, this solid state relays that came from Thailand, and how do you do it? How do you, if you've got this excess capacity, this system where, you know, you pick and place, things go out on time, how do you do something slowly? How do you leave something there? It's much easier just to clear. There is a risk associated with that. But the timing improved, and then being able to actually clock way through, start to work through the torsion pendulum. So the idea is the electron flips, the electron applies a torque goes to a torsion pendulum. And I'm going to go through the torsion pendulum and look at the Q factor, which is so your expensive crystal glass, which is high Q, the thing can sing and shatter it, or you can actually run your finger around the outside. Now, this is so sad world that I am at. I say, hey kids, we've got a crystal glass, and here am I, don't do it, you'll wreck it. And so what do they listen to, they learn? Don't experiment, they'll wreck. So you just don't do it. But high Q, so if you have a high Q oscillator, it just means relatively low loss of oscillation. So for your angle, you can reduce it. G'day, mate. The angle, you can reduce it. So if you have a high Q pendulum, you can get large, just like the opera singer. Here, the opera singer is singing, and the vibration is there. Now, similar to the thing is, you want to go high frequency. High frequency is smaller oscillations, but more of them. Especially when you want a frequency up in the range that where you do something, you can see it. So if it's 1 hertz, it's really a bit too slow to actually see it. And that's essentially what's happened with this, is that I've clicked up around 10 hertz. Yeah, 12 hertz, which is a bit slower than you see at 30 hertz, right? So it's getting up into human response time, so you can actually start to see things and start to work things out. Now, we have to go back to the story of the torsion pendulum. Now, the torsion pendulum is good and bad. It's got all these complexities with it. One thing is that it's hard to make a torsion pendulum, which is not also another type of pendulum, and where you've got mode city happening, because you've only got it anchored at one point. So one thing is I used to anchor them at 2 points, then I'd get a cue of, I don't know, 1 or 2. And it goes back 5 oscillations to bring down half time. It was appalling. Then eventually you say, well, Q essentially is the loss mechanism. So lead has so if you have a lead bell, it goes thunk. There's no Q in it, no oscillation of it. That's because it doesn't actually carry off a wave. So again, so very quickly, fishing wire, you know, it's just not really, it's got damping written into the material. So if you can get high material, and eventually, of course, I found a little strip of optical fiber, my thing, just really, what is it, 20 centimeters long, just sitting at the back of a box, and I picked it out and cleaned it up, and I knew that if I stripped it, it would not last. So I put it in there, and you could see the loss. Also, the loss is due to the coupling of the weight to the fiber, and so essentially, if you've got something strain reliefy, you know, not complete, you know, I'm going to snap you wire there, that strain relief, besides saving your wire, also dissipates a lot of energy. So when I so I'm used to doing things with optical fibers where you pop things. Now when you say pop things, you put your fiber in resin and you put the resin in. Now typically, if you've got a component you're making up, you will have the 3 millimeter rubber or plastic on the outside, then Kevlar on the inside. Also, the Kevlar is this very fine fiber, extremely strong, extremely tough. You know, this, you'd think a Kevlar would be, if you had to have a material. Material there. Again, it would dissipate energy. And so what you do is you get the Kevlar, you cut it, and you flare it out, and you basically get the Kevlar into a frizz. It's like chewing gum in your hair. You put the thing in there, and then there's these epoxies, which are for that regime, and they are almost glass-filled epoxies, although they feel as though they're glass field. I'm coming up to the National Park with a train coming through it. So you put those there. So I'm used to potting things now. 5 minute araldite is sort of just makes you weep. It's just like it sets over 24 hours. So it allows you to do things in 5 minutes, but you can just pop it off. It doesn't stick to anything, so it's there, but at least it holds and it's more solid than the way that I was holding it in the first place, which were these absolutely soft compressible rubber ferrules that you can put in, and then you can to let you go, the pendulum material I'm using is it's called a bead, but it's actually a hollow cylinder, hollow thick cylinder, so it's say it's probably 10 mil across and a 5 mil hole in the centre. So you've got probably four times as much material, but there's a gap in the centre. And it's not too good, but it's cheap and it's well dimensioned. And the thing is that you can put it in your 80-20 extruded aluminium, which forms a natural holding place for it, so you put it up, you can then glue three together to make a longish rod, well-dimensioned rod, beautifully highly polished stuff, and if it's in the thing, it's to micron accuracy, I would say. There's no way I can tell micron accuracy out in the garden, in the shed, and all that crap, but that's what I'm telling myself. But you rotate around, you put it inside the ferrule, and put your wire and all your optical fiber and stuff in the ferrule, rotate it around to check it's all okay, then pot it and rotate it around to check it's all okay, and it does oscillate well. And there was this thing where I had popped it up the top because, you want to get the queue operating, and I pulled it out and it automatically stripped the fiber, so I had a little bit of stripped stuff. And there indeed, a stripped piece of silicon, a quartz, it's basically ultra pure quartz. So optical fibers, depends how they're built, but they're, I forgot what the word is now. This is interesting. It's a weirdo. It's rather sad. They left the notice sign. They've shut the park down, but they've left their digital sign here, and it's sort of glaring into the dark. Okay. So you've got this ferrule, and you can make it up relatively well, and essentially I've got enough of this. So I really have got almost no equipment whatsoever. So fortunately I bought two little packets for 95 cents each of these ferrules, and probably more than 95 cents each. I saw it online for 95 cents, a pack of six, and made up various things, and have one on the go, next prototype up, and just cycle it through. And I had the thing of anchoring at two points, made it really good and solid, and especially that wasn't really necessary. Once the switching had gone, it was no longer, going across. And then working off, and I wrote up the formula for the sensitivity of it, and a friend of mine who's now a bigwig professor said, have you looked at polyurethane? My polyurethane has got no Young's modulus, we're looking here. The ultimate is a diamond wire or a nanotube wire. But this polyurethane is not, but it's got a breaking strength of 600%. So if I've got one of these things and it's a ruler, I could stretch that ruler for 2 meters before it broke. It's pretty amazing. That's roughly the rule is 30 centimeters. So if I'm going down here, I'm just going to be careful going down here because it has rained, and I don't know. It's not greasy at all. It's sort of after a long amount of heat, right? Some of the roads, not in the national parks, but the roads towards the city, get a film of oil on them, and the oil comes and they're just slipping. I'm still going to be careful going down here. It's going to be a real game. So one of the things that is possible is you have these new geometries. So I began to look at, have instead of a single thing expand into a cylinder, and a cylinder has this great thing that I can actually anchor it well and stabilize it, and then I did the formula for it, so that's the thickness cubed. So you have a very thin cylinder, but then as you rotate it, it will tend to crush, it will be unstable going down. So there's a lot of things you have to really think about it. What could I do? I could, there's sort of a whole lot of interesting, really interesting things you could build with one of these things. All these things are notoriously sensitive to temperature and humidity, and the mind just is going insane doing it. But that being said, I've sort of did a version of it, making a prism, so this is fibers held at, above and below, which, so three fibers going down to a triangle, And that helped, had a beautiful, started to have a beautiful cues, the sort of that I wanted, no losses. That essentially Q is the loss. You know, what's your loss? You want a high Q. Stuff that. So I don't know how it yeah, I honestly can't tell you. This is the problem with the memory. So I can't tell you the actual process where I said, oh, yeah, I sort of began looking at you're putting all this circuitry into to create a temporary field where if you had a permanent field, could you possibly arrange something with magnets and gradients and how could that possibly work? And it'd have to be horizontal. And so the main thing is that I turned the pendulum from the vertical to the horizontal plane. And at the horizontal plane, you could do these fantastic things and have basically a knife edge hinge, and essentially Q's gone up to 100, 200. You're doing this with, this is having a, forgetting the torsion completely, having a pendulum. Now, this is a pendulum, but it's almost a torsion. It's sort of like a cross between a pitch. It's where the actual fingers go up, knife edge fingers go up and hit the inside of the this tube. And so this tube's, the weight of the tube is holding, its weight is now, you're not supporting the weight. The weight is actually supporting the, and like they only weigh a few grams, right? And this holds it there. Now, again, ferrite, it's cheap, easily machined, it's lower density, and lower saturation field. I'm not going to get the two, I'm not going to build a two Tesla, you know, in my wildest dream, I'm not going to build a two Tesla coil to saturate iron. But, you know, it really depends, it's the field energy density, the size of the substance, and that, how well it channels into it. So I might get there. But at the moment, I'm getting such huge effects that it's, you know, let's start tracking it down. And it's, at the moment, it means that as I go through, don't do that, I can't manufacture this, I can't do this. And this beautiful thing, it goes for very high Q. Now, you build it, now, this is really down to the edge. I just happen to have five scalpels. Two of them were the small ones which would actually go in. So I mounted the scalpels on this 80-20 and top melt glue to hold it up at the right angle. And there. And the great thing about this is I had that yesterday night and overnight, and it just stayed there the whole time. And I don't know. Perhaps the problem is that their plane axes, right? The point of contact is an axis, and you've got to line the two knives out up exactly, and it's then you have to put it in, but it's a very good thing. And so I sort of varied it, and I had these tubes, 1 millimeter brass tubes. And the great thing about this is that this is beautiful to bend. If you bend it, it bends at a tight radius. It looks, so it's machine bent. And you can actually get a point of things by getting your wire cutters and cutting it at a 90 or a very sharp angle to get a point. And I was able to, a bit of fiddling, lash this up together. And that's what's sitting in there at the moment. And the story, the end story is that this is not stable. This, after a while, even though it's only a few grams walking back and forth, it wears the point out, and it changes its frequency. So now it's IQ. You don't have to. You can, you know, watch it go back and forth and camera it, or you can guess what it is and actually look at the oscillation you get out of it, and then track it in. Because if it's off resonance, it's not just that it doesn't, it pulses. So essentially when it's on resonance, it's a sort of nice big oscillation. So eye-wateringly big. But now going up and down, you can see this bizarre thing that when it's first built, it's great. But after a while, the actual laser line begins to bead a little bit. There you go, and oscillate. So what's happened now is that with this hooked at two points, it's open, so it mustn't be. They'll be right. I wonder what the water will be like over here. Yeah, so it oscillates, and so you can actually see. And you know, this is no, and so I went out and bought food, cooked dinner, and a microwave oven blew up, and the insulator went underneath it, and one of the insulation wires went out underneath it, and it just fell. Now, to me, that's just, hang on, there's no component which has failed. There's a circuit a wire has given up, the high voltage wire has given up the ghost. You know, that's, to me, ultimately fixable. And I said, oh, how about fix it? No way. And which you can rather think, because it's only $200 a microwave, a fairly decent microwave, and we'll look at a talking microwave because my wife is blind. Okay, well, getting back to this. This bath thing was no good, and then I went to the sewing kit and got some pins and stuck it through foam, and looked at this. Oh, not quite there. The pins are magnetic, you don't want that. And then I've got the probes from my cheap probes from my thing. They're non-magnetic, hardened steel, nice points, and they can bend up at the right point, because you essentially want them to bend up, and then at a fairly sharp angle, just tip inside the side of your thing, and they actually fit snug, press fit into the 80-20 components. And so, and I've just played with that on the kitchen table, a Q oscillation. So this is a ring down cue, something absolutely insane, something you just would, it's for the record books. I think it'd be even up there as professional. Now, what's really great is that this has compressed the size from a sort of an aquarium tank size to a shoebox. It's by putting it horizontal, and the cue is high, it's reliable. You'd probably have to put a transportation yoke on it, so the thing wouldn't shake the bejesus out of it. But it's getting there, and still you do calculations and you say, what must be the field of my thing? And I think my field is probably got a few gas. I think there's 1,000 gas in a Tesla. The feel of this thing, even though it's quite hot, is nothing. It's sort of like really sad. I put all this effort into it. I'm seeing all this big effect. Now, one of the great things, so I've got this going on, and tomorrow I will do some podcasting and put along this next level, and then work on a focus communication piece for next Tuesday, RSL, where I give a sort of note to Rotary, which is saying, this is the basic idea, that look, no one gets no ideas, whatever they are, they very rarely get out. They take a long time to get, so there's a major task, I really need more help in communication. This is to try and get that across. So, we're going down here. Oh, Christ. Okay, you can't hear any frogs, so I don't understand what the story is here. So I've got this ready to go. Now, one of the things is that, there's this incredible arrogance that, don't talk to me, I don't need no discussion, which I could well understand, in terms of you're set to reject anything outside the usual. You let people, it's like many people think your e-password getting into the army, your location. Someone with the password can go in. Anybody else, it's like encrypted. All communications and society's encrypted. You've got to have the password to get through. This is one of the things with the explosion of communication, is that people, makes it very hard to communicate outside the usual channels. Oh my God. Now I'm just, should walk up the other side of the canyon, but I just don't have the energy. I've got to really push it here. And it is absolutely beautiful here. I might just stop for a okay. This is, I suppose, one of the spooky things here is that you can hear anyone coming. I know I'm completely alone in this national park. Now, what's interesting is about 5 years ago, you would have two or three people walking at night. So now that's disappeared for some reason. People, I don't understand why that is particularly so. So this is coming across. Now, one of the things is that I've gone from a torsional pendulum to a basic pendulum, but a pendulum which is driven by torsion. Well, there you go. A pendulum which is really driven by torsion, so it has a significant amount of weight above its point of contact. It's actually a tire, or you can imagine a Christmas wreath on your door. You just have it, it will move from side to side. It's rocking there, except this one rocks, 500 times before it settles down there. And so it's like if it was, the point of contact was exactly the center, there'd be nothing holding it back, and you'd have to rely on torsion. So it's just moving away. If you imagine this, a linear space between a torsion pendulum and a normal pendulum. And a normal pendulum is torsion free. Like if you're trying to rock your kid, which is a normal pendulum, by actually kicking their legs up and moving them back. You know how you actually swing. You do a little bit of torsion for yourself. You're a torsion component in this swing. So even the actual act of a child swing is an example of it. But in this case, the actual attachment of the swing is actually inside the weight. And the thing is that when you build it really small, the distances are small, and it's the square, you get a very high frequency, right? So one of the great things is that this is small, goes high frequency. And so this is 800 millisecond round tap. This is going up. Now, the beauty of this is that it allows you to start to say, well, what? This is being swung left and right by a magnetic field going up its axis. What the heck is going on? And so you can actually do a bit of field compensation with a neodymium magnet in your hand to just move it around, have a look. And what I think the answer is that there is a component, or the Earth is a gigantic dipole field, okay, right? And what happens, so I still don't have an explanation for why in a perfectly symmetric torsion spring pendulum, the Earth's magnetic field could possibly add torque to it. That is an absolute mystery. I can easily do it if I add in parasitic errors in that there's couplings of motion or it's off axis and things like that. But what happens here is that this is definitely off axis. If you imagine it's a pendulum, and pendulum rocking from side to side, and it's, say if you're in a swing, your left hip goes right, your right hip goes south, and vice versa as it goes across. And how could that be? Well, you have a dipole to dipole. This is going to be tough. Oh, gee, my legs can hardly move. Okay, going up the top here. I'll be breathing like anything to get up here. So I'll get home, fall asleep. Sleep of the wicked. Okay, so, so holding this magnet. So the answer to this is, the breaking news here is that perhaps I don't have to actually shield it everywhere. I just have to create a dipole. I don't have to null the magnetic field. I have to null the dipole. If the dipole is moving, I can just have dipole null the dipole at the critical point. Now, if I've got a bar magnet. Now I can hold it end to end, but if I hold it side, long way to long ways, those magnets will pull to each other when the south dipole is opposite the north. So that's south towards you, north away on your object. You say you've got south to north in your left hand and north to south in your right hand. Those will pull together. And if you flip opposite, it will push apart. So if you are pushing your magnet back and forth, this will, and your left hand is a swing, and your left hand is moving back and forth, you can actually get it to swing. I think that's what happens. And so I can clock up the swing by holding a dipole magnet, a little neodymium dipole, and I can null the swing. So this means that you can create a rather nifty dipole nulling effect. So now the thing is here now with the pendulum system, the laser hitting off the pendulum, the light would snake in a sort of lissajou pattern down. Now, because it's on a knife edge, it goes back and back and forth really well, except you can see as the point wears down a little bit, if you turn a little bit, you can see the actual thing slow down and accelerate as in its path and oscillate the time a little bit. Well, at least your brain thinks it can, I'm not sure, but it's physically there. The thing I have at the moment, which is this brass pipe, crimped and cut and bent, looks beautiful, completely useless. So it lasts about an hour before it starts to change and drift off, and just awful. So that had to go. This is the concept prototype. Concept prototype is deliberately along, not deliberately, it's just, people are, just the way of the world. And so the concept prototype has led to solid-state switching, which has to be above what Einstein had available, because solid-state, this stuff didn't come out until pretty recently. Oh, that's 100 years ago, solid-state. What, it's probably 50 years ago. Pretty amazing. Pretty so exciting the first time this all came out. A torsion pendulum to a torsion-sensitive rotational pendulum on a knife edge. So it's, a watch, getting to the watch stuff, which is essentially what we're doing. It's a bit like Harrison as a watch. You're figuring out these things. So horizontal, all okay. And then I don't quite know if I know that I've got the next thing. I may have mentioned this. I've got the next things ready to go, which is probes. Your voltage probes hanging around. Oh, they're nice and sharp, heavy, big. And I'll put those in tomorrow, but it looks as though that it'll be relatively straightforward to null the dipole if the dipole is the I still don't have a reason for why the Earth's magnetic field could create a torsion, but it does. But it definitely would rocket back and forth if I'm making an oscillating dipole in there, and the oscillation dipole is with the Earth's magnetic field. I should be able to null that. Now, the the great thing here is that I can then wind up some sort of headphone coils for the top part and the bottom part, and null it pretty easily, because you're looking at the size of your the size of your field. You've also got the problem of your ferrite moving into a density gradient. So your ferrite will tend to move into higher density magnetic field. but with this, jewel bearing, I think jewel as in sapphire jewel, it's not sapphire jewel. But yeah, I think it's going to be close enough. Wouldn't it be lovely to have a sapphire point at the tip there? That'd be great. and I'm and look, the ferrite sample, that's not to be laughed at. Like, if you got your hacksaw, you could hacksaw through your new metal, your iron, you couldn't hacksaw through the ferrite. This is a hard ceramic. This is a fantastic ceramic bead, and it's far over spec for anything that anyone wants to use. So it's just like, people can't manufacture a piece of crap. People can't deliver something over 3 months. That sort of thing is gone. It's pretty interesting to see that you see the the radio ferrite, and that's from another era. It's a very amazing thing to see. That's poor dimension, it's a poor shape, and it's just awful. And that was the time when people were making this on their kitchen bench. And so nowadays, it's hard to actually make something low tolerance in industry. And I've worked with some machinists, and you know, essentially, the fundamental trick is rotation of your part against the same stops. And so that means that you build your part one way, remove it and put it back against the spots rotated, you get exactly what you want. You know, here, this person was getting micron tolerance, and beautiful, beautiful work. And it's just the method of metrology to get going. So I've got a feeling that I'll be able to null the oscillation, or get this up, and then null the oscillation with a light current. You know, something dippy. Some sort of nice current, and it's be very interesting, because rather than getting rid of all the magnetic field, I'll be just creating a dipole, which has to be lower. And so this is a set the head of my now horizontal pendulum. I'll have 10 loops on the right, 10 loops on the left, then going the opposite way, so the field reverses down the bottom. 10 loops and 10 loops. The same current throughout. Two separate currents. And just put it in. And, I'm sure that this will, null the dipole, because there's only one mechanism that's, possible. And I should be able to null that, and especially if the current can be measured, I can measure. And this is where Raspberry Pi is beating an Arduino. Besides not having, you know, it's broken with a keyboard, Ethernet, and Arduino is programmable with a serial cable, alright? Or, which is thing, okay, so you can get it in. Raspberry is programmable with a keyboard, mouse, Ethernet, wireless, you just put in a wireless to make what is it? Raspberry Pi wireless. Put in a wireless dongle. End of story. I just, whereas Arduino is, you've got to get a wireless shield, which has a wireless to serial. So the serial is a real bottleneck with the Arduino. But also the Arduino has HDMI, but it also has a camera port put in there. Now, the only problem is that it's just that the machine vision software I have is National Instruments. I can't see how I can get National Instruments stuff onto Arduino, and given that I haven't been a customer of National Instruments for 13 years, I'm not going to get much help. But essentially, Arduino will be able to look at the various things. Now, the thing is that we are dropping down. Now, I can increase the magnetic field possibly by a factor of at the most 10. Okay, so I can go from 12 volts, 1 amp, which is what this it can handle to 24 volts, 3 amp, 4 amp, or it's 3.3 amp. So, that's, well, 3.3 amps is the main thing. And the 24 volts means more coils, and, except, the problem is that I can afford to build a coil, a 12-watt, 1-amp coil, going up to 24, the price goes up because I can't get the cheap copper, greater copper, greater winding, and I just don't have the precision, hand precision to build that. So that's a mystery, but essentially the material is bad, but it's got sort of a saving grace of it's the actual permissivity, per density, and I don't know what they're quite the operating frequency, which obviously it beats iron hand over hand because iron rolls off at the high frequency. So ferrites, and it's, you know, starts to peak up and do it. So I'm not up at the high frequency, so it's not so good. But the bottom line is that I'm taking a credible step towards it, in terms of I'll get the magnetic field up, some of the problems solved, but I still won't get there. So is that worth a publication? I don't know. If you've got something which is going a long way, but I really have to put in a move on to it. And the sort of dreadful thing is that one of these things with these projects is that when you're building a project and you've only got your shed and scrap to build it, you don't have the resources to leave a project. Well, I'm going to have to leave this project alone. And go on. But I think I can get this up to the stage where I can write a bit of a publication. The thing is that the thing that really motivates me is not what... The thing that motivated me is that the complete misconception about the electron, and coupled with the misconception about the electron, a lack of care that one should do it. So I don't know, it's, I mean, this may be a bit rich, but I would consider the way that schools and people treat the electron now is a bit like child abuse. And then these people say, well, why should we listen to children? We know what's going on. It's sort of like, you know, at what point do you start to break? And essentially this is sort of like a royal commission, but this is some sort of way of advancing the cause. Now, the idea is that you investigate this case, and it's going to peter out, it's going to fall short of its objective, but at least it's at least it's there. So the motivation was much higher, but what it achieved, what it's going to achieve, is a lot less. Now, the only other ace up my sleeve, I tell you what would be, people just, people poo-poo, it's two things. One is, a single mode laser produces a well-defined beam, blah, blah, blah. And you go two-mode laser, it's on its second mode, so the top is of an opposite face to the left. I don't know whether you can make a two-mode. You have to really struggle. But the your motor line is extremely fine. And, in fact, the bigger your beam is, the more the motor line is something incredibly fine. So you're... and this is true with atoms. although the electron is not a particular point, it's this wave function, and it's got its existence. The idea of a point is alive and well at the nodal line where it doesn't exist. So, you know, what I would like to do is I'd like to introduce a phase plate halfway through, and basically launch a second mode. Do this with second mode into the 5 minutes. It's not going to change anything, but it means that your point at the other end may be a big point, and that point, whatever it is, but it will have a nodal line in the centre of it, and that is that will be ability to track. So that's one method. And I suppose there's some molecular physicists, I'm always aware of that. There's an analog for that, called a Fano, I think it's a Fano zero. And this is where the phase, information of your atom piles up, and you have a phase zero. And this is a window, it's called a Fano window. This is a super fine point, so you may have a huge spectrally broadened line and all this type of stuff. You'll have a sharp zero, and you can measure that zero. You can tell where the center of that line is. And again, this is what I've got from molecular spectroscopy. You've got a line, you want it big enough. You can have it extremely weak, we can have it very powerful, but you can't use the centre as the top of the line, because that's in saturation, so it looks like trying to find the top of a very flat hill. The very centre of a flat hill, so what you do is you walk halfway up the hill, mark that point, walk over the hill halfway, I think, and then track back 50 metres, and it'll be fairly flat. Now, you think that might be easy, but if you've got some signal noise going around, it's much easier to do that way. So one of the things I'd like to do is put a half wave plate in the beam, infrared, so that's it's red, 300 nanometers, but in glass. I have to really think about the feature. That would be a great thing to do. But again, you know what's going to happen is that I'll get this up to a point where I can actually take it into university. I'm not going anywhere with it, because, say, whereas before I was in the research community, I could do something. I could actually get funding. I cannot get there. So the best I can do, I think that has to be in the paper, is just suggest this. You know, given this, and the other thing is, I've got two modes of thinking. I've got something in the back of my head saying this is an old way of thinking. So I want to pick up the light off the mirror and reflect it back to the mirror. What that means is, you know, have a long mirror. Look at this. Oh, Christ. Oh, no, that's okay. So someone's throwing out some old dog boxes, but they haven't got the cage on the front of it. Oh, I'm out of this here, mate. That really blew my mind as to what exactly I was... this is the light comes in, bounces off. So the light's going in normal, it bounces off. It's at 1 degree. Then it goes into a cylindrical lens, which takes... it does nothing to that half degree, right? But you have it such that it will just bounce back onto your plate. Yeah, I suppose it's just, you just bounce back onto your plate. So you have basically two long mirrors, and it goes bounces back and forth to get in there. So it can bounce several times and pick up 1 degree. Then it was coming at 2 degree, it will add another degree to it, and it will just amplify the angle. So one of the things I really want to do is put in that phase shift. I might just, you know who I could possibly, there's one person who built devices based on this phase shift in the dispersion to make optical fiber filters, so I might just see if I can tweak him. I think that's really my only hope. And really, come to think of it, there's an alternative to this, and this is capacitive sensors. Now, quite seriously, if I've got a pendulum which is not turning but shaking back and forth, I can actually just put the displacement of that pendulum with a capacitive sensor. End of story. Except to build a nanometer sensitive circuit, which is going to detect up to 10 hertz. I suppose the 10 hertz signal is easy enough to do. That seems the obvious thing to do. That is, I don't think you could, firstly, it doesn't have to be flat. You could, I was trying to think how if you could plate the entire surface of this, you can make it completely conductive, and then just measure the capacitance of it. That's one way of doing it. Again, I may not have the ability to build a circuit, and I don't know whether people have capacitive sensors out here in Australia. So essentially, you can use the capacitance, change the capacitance to measure a small distance, so you can bring it up your, you can wind up your, I'm just trying to think, wind up your other plate really close, and check your voltage drop between the two of it as a function of oscillation. I'm just really trying to think how that could be done. So essentially, it's just like your capacitive touch of your phone, you can, you've seen Star Trek with a wave over a door. There was a capacitive sensors in Germany. When I went there, it was a house of capacitive sensors. And so you just put your hand over something, the light went on. And, so by changing the R in your, circuit, the R in the capacitance of your circuit, you can actually determine it. But building a capacitive sensor is one hell of a thing to do, but it may well do it. And I think looking at it, they're supposed to have a nanometer resolution, but often these things are quoted where they can pick up over a long time. This person thinks I'm absolutely mad. But yeah, I'll see if I can at least discuss a capacitive circuit. Now, the other experiment, which is the... So I have a series of projects. The other experiment is the Thompson effect, which is that a material's Peltier coefficient is temperature dependent. Okay, so if it is temperature dependent, you can have a temperature gradient and a current going one way. In and out will either heat and cool depending on the temperature coefficient of your source. And so it does the temperature. So if it does the temperature, you could have a probe in which really highly accurately measures temperature. But these things get extremely tiny and whiny. If you've only got a small power supply, and you've got to get up to the maximum current density, your wire gets incredibly thin. And then it's got to be iron wire. So it gets incredibly thin. So therefore you can't measure the temperature. So, but if the wire is incredibly thin, it can still, it's different temperature, it can still thermally expand. And so you could measure 1 degree difference of thermal expansion over a certain distance under a microscope, which sort of looking at is very hard to do. But there's yet another thing you can do, is measure the temperature. Or not measure the resistance or the voltage drop. So you've got the in versus the out, and this should be, you should be able to put a probe in the center, which is, you have in, out, and it's twisted together. The twists wrap around your heat source at the other end, and you clamp your voltage source, your voltage, and you measure. And so you create a Wheatstone bridge between that and a variable resistor. Not, yeah, there's no prize in it. And so this at the moment looks as though it's working. It looks as though it's very hard to see because the way they built it, it's very sensitive. It tends to drift a lot. And I've just got to build it. Now, where I'm up to on that is that I've made some... high temperature sort of micro furnace out of a pencil lead. Now the problem with that is that pencil lead's really beginning to rain at the moment. Me poor, sorry sod. I think I'll get home and have a shower. Oh, take my blood pressure and do a shower. Yeah, so one of the things is that similar to you build a concept prototype, you leave it on overnight just to see how it wears in, and you go, oh, no good. So with this, these little electrodes, there's a good reason they don't use a graphite pencil electrode, which is made out of clay and graphite. Yes, it can get very hot. You can get something white hot with a 12-volt source coming out of it, you know, enough to melt metal and stuff like that. Oh, Christ. Oh, I will be a sorry shit coming on. Oh, okay. This slowly burns inward. It oxidizes. So not only does it get weaker, and not only is it uncontrollable where the heat is maximum in it, and so I have to give that up for a go, and ultimately for that I do think I do want some A to D and voltage switching. So at a certain point there's actually, oh, wouldn't it be great if there was a Raspberry Pi capacitive sensor which was at all credible. I just, who is going to have a capacitive distance sensor? I don't know. And the bottom line is that that communication has gone expanded, but it's also become encrypted, such that if you're outside that encryption network, you can't get access to it. But because mentally, I'm able to do it. So one of the things I would definitely want to do is again, this thing is really, when your hands up, hunching over and looking for the effect on the dials and stuff like that, or on the digital meters, so I can measure 500 microvolts. I can possibly do better, but I don't really have to do better than that because it's drifting much more than that. So now we're cleaning up my son's room. He's gone off to the ANU, which is okay. But you know, they had boxes, and I took a box, and you can't take that box. And so I have to find a box to put this in, because the temperature is, the wind dries it. Oh, I'm sorry, shit. See if this person is raining at the moment. So that's there. One of the other tasks I'm getting up is a model of band diagram model, three-dimensional band, proper quantum mechanical band diagram model. Yeah, it's physically building it. it's achievable. One is that, so this is, first one is Einstein, second one is Thompson, the third one is the scale universe, so I'm just going to keep on plugging away on that. Then the next tranche, I've gotten the next tranche of three, this is a band two ones, is a model band gap, to teach that properly, and a Wi-Fi science beaker, which is more a learning exercise than anything else. Configuration. Oh, gee, it's really hammering down at the moment. So this tropical depression's hitting. Well, we're not sure if you're in the tropical depression. We get if you imagine monsoon. So monsoon means seasonal. Monsoon, I think it's Arabic for seasonal. The monsoon rain, it dumps it out. It's like this wet town, squeezes it out of Indonesia. It's a massive water over there. Then nothing happens over Australia. And then if the weather's a bit unstable, we get a bit of the leftover moisture from the Indies coming. So this rain I'm getting, even though I'm really close to the Pacific Ocean, but I think this is Pacific Ocean stuff because the rain's been blowing in. But it's probably the rain. It's probably the moisture's moisture from there. But it's pretty miserable come there. So getting back to the second tier stuff, there's the formation of electrons. Now, I'm sort of very attracted to the Arduino lead strips, where you can address up to 50, I think, lead lights from one Arduino board, which means I can populate 50 electrons it's just place those at particular points in lines to actually build it up. So that's attractive. However, it's detracts from the model to have anything in that space except those electrons. And if you could ideally float them in oil so you couldn't see the wire holding them up, have it in a tank of oil, that would be something fantastic. Or have some, this is where you really need a nano wire, the carbon fiber. So the fiber is so small that no one can see it, so it looks, so I don't know if you've ever seen carbon fiber. The nano fibers that, these people can actually lift objects up as if nothing is holding it there. So that's the sort of thing I would like. Obviously I'm not going to get there. To hold the electrons up there and to make them glow. Now with the lasers at 74 cents a pop, it could well be that I can dismount all the board and banks of lasers and address them to switch on to make them glow. Model has to do several things. It's got to A, break into four parts, B, have a band gap where the energy levels start to move, and I think I can do that. Then you've got to actually re-take up the band gap. So you've got to, your band gap comes low across, what you've got to do is that you've got to take the negative X section, pull it out and put it on in front of where the X rolls over to make a hill. And then you've got to get your vertical sections up. You then have to move your vertical section across such that it marries up to form the valence band section. I don't know why they call it valence band. Valence band section up there. And then you got to move them back and forth. So once you have this model, within no time whatsoever, you can start to explain band theory. And there's this realization that with it, that everything you're taught in New South Wales schools, everything is incorrect. Like, fiercely incorrect. So, that's what I want to get to. And I think I've got little bits of it coming together. I just can't really think of how I'm going to get it all together. It's just a tour de force to engineering to get it done. So I can sort of see how it's done. It's just that this is a really complex model, in that you don't want anything in it. You just want the electrons floating there in space, and you can do that with a computer simulation. It's just how you can actually have something and you can't have them, you've got to have them online. It's just, how do you do it? I must admit, I don't quite get how I'm going to actually produce it. Okay, I'm getting getting into the final stretch home. Thanks a lot for listening, and I don't know, you might not get much from it, but it's just one person struggling against the elements of health and bureaucracy and science, and then each day you come in a million miles away and wind up a million minus 1 mile towards the objective. But I suppose the main thing is, with new perspective and you're a little bit fitter from having fought the hard fight. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.